So all of these teachings now, they are based on the truth, you know, they're based on the two truths, the relative truth and the ultimate truth. So the relative truth, all of the teachings, you know, befitting on how beings perceive this universe or this existence. And then the ultimate showing the reality of how, you know, how this universe, although looks so, that appears in mirrors of emanations or in mirrors or in miraculous appearance, and that all of them, in fact, have a single nature. So Buddha gives this teaching. So all the teachings are based on the relative truth and the ultimate truth. So when we practice, or when we read, or when we listen, or when we practice these teachings, we have to understand how, you know, in what context does Buddha talk. Is this relative or ultimate? So we have to have, we need to understand, right? Discerning that. And then that becomes, when we understand in that way, then we, you know, start, you know, again, that to put that into practice, there are three ways of practicing. One is called, you know, to listen, next is to contemplate, and then to meditate. So the listening, contemplating and meditating on that. So first we read, we, you know, see whether that's true or not. Or if you don't understand, then the teacher gives explanation on that one, and we try to understand at least the scriptural meaning of that one. And then if we come to certain understanding, then we contemplate on that one. And then we familiarize, we actually engage ourselves into those understanding of ours, of what it actually means, and then we contemplate. So that's meditation. So then the teachings actually work in this way. So meditate, you know, first of all, listening to that one and understanding the scriptural, you know, all of this, the scriptural meaning of that one, and then what it actually means. And then we contemplate on that one. For example, all compounded phenomena is impermanent. When we say that, and what does that mean? You know, we reflect on that one. And then that itself has so many different commentaries on that one. So we contemplate on that one. So then contemplating it is like that scripture actually bringing closer to you, closer to your experience, closer to your understanding. And that contemplation is, we say, you know, it's like sharpening the sword. So you sharpen, you know, sharpen, you're sharpening your understanding, it's sharpening your sword. And then you're ready, the contemplation, you have it, you know, you have your sword is very sharp. And then when actual experience, or you, when the circumstance that you encounter, or that you encounter, so for example, suffering coming to you, then you, at that point, because you understand all compounded phenomena is impermanent, your sword is very sharp. That understanding can cut right at that. So that meditation, see, it can strike there. So there is no experience of pain, solid experience of pain like we would have if you didn't contemplate, because your sword, your understanding is so sharp to understand that reality. So this is how it goes. So contemplating and then listening first, understanding what it means, and then that one bringing into your mind. You know, speaking to yourself again and again what it means. That this is very important. So that's why, you know, all of the aspiration prayers and all these things are based in that way. So first we listen, you know, like the prayers, then we speak to ourselves, you know, and then we contemplate those words. We try to, you know, even if you don't have much deeper understanding, well, at least as keep on repeating that word, we start to build a little bit of experience, you know. So when actually we encounter those situations, we are actually able to tackle or actually to actually, you know, to fare through that experience. So this is how it goes. And then on that one, then the three trainings come, and on top of that one, the three trainings, the training, like the discipline, the training of discipline, and the training of concentration, and the training of wisdom. So these are, you know, very important steps of how we put into practice. And when we talk about discipline, we know very clearly how Buddha outlines in the first teachings that there's no, you know, truth of suffering, that how, what's that suffering? And then, you know, suffering, of course, there's so many different kinds of suffering, like the hell beings, the hungry ghost realm, the animal realm, the human realm, the demigods realm, and the gods realm, all of them. They are suffering, you know, related to them because of their karma, and also that pervasive suffering, that wherever you are, you know, be it in the hell realm or in the highest God's realm, there's suffering eventual, you know, even if you have happiness, temporal happiness, sooner or later when that karma is exhausted, then you again, you know, fall into that miserable realm where you experience. So that kind of, so he talks about that. And all this comes from karma. All this comes from karma. So if you were to implement just the first way of how to stop that suffering is to stop karma. So, and to do that one, then we have to understand, you know, what actually creates karma is through our body, speech and mind. And then we have to recognize, or we have to identify the 10 non-virtue, the 3 non-virtue of our body, that is to, you know, kill, to steal, and to, you know, bodily misbehavior, for example, committing adultery and so forth, like that. So you focus on practicing the abandonment of those 3 non-virtue of the body. So then it comes to speech. So speech is lying, slandering, harsh word, and just idle chatter that just stirs or disturbs people's mind or one's mind. For example, we talk about somebody else's situation or country's situation that just is not helpful but just stirs our anger towards somebody. Or we talk about somebody that stirs somebody else's attachment, or so that kind of talk. So idle chatter, but that which gives rise to negativities. So such, those 4 again in discipline now, you have to practice that abandonment of 4 non-virtue of the speech. And then the 3 from the mind, you know, malicious thoughts, you know, bad intentions or intentions that are always in a negative toward oneself or toward others. And then hatred. And then wrong view. You know, wrong view is a view, you know, generally view that we think, oh, negative actions will not bring suffering, or positive actions will not bring happiness. So that can, so.
What's the difference between maliciousness and anger?
Malicious. Napsim is more like a mind that desires, that you, you covet on something. For example, you have a very good life, And then, you know, you don't, you are, you have a very good life, but I wish that, oh, you know, may I have what he has, what you have. And then I'm not happy, happy about what you have. Then, you know, so that kind of, that coveting mind would, so my intentions are not good. And then on top of that one, because of you have that kind of thought, you don't like your, I don't like your situation, then I generate anger toward you, anger toward myself, then that's hatred. So those, so like that. So that's the beginning of our practice, you know, beginning of our practice. And when we begin now, engage ourselves in this practice, then it's very, it becomes very, very interesting. Because, you know, normally many people are aware that, oh, I should not hurt people, I should not kill people, or I should not kill beings like that. We have some kind of we, in our mind, we have certain understanding that, oh, I should not be unkind to others, I should not be rude or harsh toward others, that we understand that, you know, in our mind. And then people are very, you know, some are good about, you know, how to practice that one. But in the Buddhist tradition, you know, there is this training of the discipline is actually to make a vow. You know, not only should you be aware, but actually you have to make a vow, you have to commit yourself. So then, you know, so that training of discipline comes there. So I understand not to harm, not to kill, or to kill or harm others is bad. I should refrain from doing that. I understand. But I have a vow now that I have received this sermon, I have received this vow from my teacher, and I made this vow. So when, you know, if I didn't have that vow, that I might come to a point that, oh, it's okay, because I don't, you know, it's, I might try to be a little flexible, you know, try to be a little flexible about at that point. But because of vow, you know, it reminds me that's, it's like a dignity, you know, because I have received this vow from my teacher. And even if my teacher is not there at that moment, but I have my, I have to keep my dignity of made, that I made that vow in front of my teacher. So because of that vow, your actions become very positive, you know, you're powerful in fact. So, I was told lately that, I didn't understand in that way, but I just came to understand this way, that when you vow that I will not kill, or when I vow that I will not kill, I don't have to kill, but just by making that vow that I will not kill, that all the animals that were saved today from the slaughterhouse, we, or I'm actually accumulating the merit of their life being alive, you know. And this is how we talk about merit, you know, when we make that vow. It's like investing, you know, you have already some capital, and then every day, because of their vow, so, you know, it multiplies your action, your merit starts to, you know, to develop, starts to grow more and more like that. So
when you take refuge every day, you're recommitting yourself. So in that sense,
mm-hmm.
like when you're sitting, you take
yes.
the vow of refuge, you're recommitting yourself. So is that also accumulating what you're saying, that merit for
mm-hmm.
that right then at that time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's very, but that's why that training of discipline plays very important role. You know, this is, so first is the, you know, that discipline now we are talking about. Now, there are many, you know, it's all founded on those 10 non-virtue, or, you know, which now when we talk opposed or in contrast to that one, then we talk about the 10 virtue, you know. So your discipline in actually accumulating or practicing the 10 virtue like that. So even if you're not able to do all 10, then first beginning, I will not kill. So you vow in front of your teacher, you know, if you take refuge, vow, you say, I will not kill. Then for how many days or for how long? You know, in the teachings there, like this person who was a butcher, a wise or a teacher came and then told him, you know, you kill all the time, it's very bad, that you should vow that you will not kill. But then he said, I cannot refrain from killing, because if I don't kill, then I cannot support my family. This is my only means of supporting my family. Then the teacher said, if you cannot refrain from killing during the day, make this vow that you will not kill during the night. So then he said, okay, that's possible. So then he made this vow that he will not kill during the night. So because of that merit, later, in many years or in his life and the next life, he was born in the hell realm. During daytime, he would be in this hot plate, burning in this reviving hell, that his body would be sliced, you know, body would be cut into 1,000 pieces, blood would run out, and again he would just pass out, and soon as he would come back to his senses, his body would just go intact, and soon as he had felt like a body, he would be again marked and sliced into 1,000 pieces like that. But when night came, he felt he had this experience of, you know, joy, that pleasure, you know, most beautiful experience, had comfort, and this was because he made that vow, you know, he had that experience. Because he killed during the day, he experienced that karma of killing. Because he made the vow of, you know, that not to kill during the night, he had that experience. So like that in this. So discipline plays a very important role. So, but that vow now, you know, that comes now. This is the second step when we move into the practice. So this is how actually first we understand. Like first we were saying, why Buddha gave teachings. You know, Buddha gave teachings because of compassion, seeing that all beings want to be happy, but actually not understanding what actually brings happiness. So to correct that view, he gave those four teachings, you know, the Four Noble Truths. Our state of existence, why we have so much frustrations, why you have so much, you know, all this experience. It's because we actually we planted that seed in the first place. So, like that. And then what actually brings happiness is through the cultivation or through practicing through the right view. So like that goes. You know, that's why when we put that teachings into practice, then begins, you know, it's called the Eightfold Noble Path, which begins with right view. Right view is actually understanding, you know, happiness or good karma bringing happiness, bad karma bringing suffering. So this is how we develop that practice from the right view. So now actually to put it into practice, then like I say, that the three trainings come into plays this very important role. So understanding why actually we have to have discipline is to understand, you know, we actually make this vow. And it's all the training of the mind. You know, it's all the so that when we make this vow, when we're about to do something bad, and we, you know, we can control our mind. We can actually say to ourselves that I should not be doing this. I will not do this. And this is how we go. And then to make that vow, or to talk about the vow, there are many different kinds of vows. So like the, you know, vow that it's called one. So if you want to refrain from killing, so that would be one precept vow. If you want to refrain from stealing, that would be two precept vows. So not killing, not stealing. Three, so if you're saying I won't commit adultery, so three precept vow. And then four, if you say I don't want to indulge in any intoxicate, you know, any substances that intoxicates. So four, and then I won't lie, and this thing, it goes on like that. So it builds in that way. So precepts go on that way. So in that way, so the most extended, elaborated precept is that of the nun, the ordained, the bhikshuni, the bhikshuni, you know, the nun who has 353 precepts, like that. And then the monks, they have 253. So like that, you know, it goes in that manner, like that most. But their vow, again, you have to understand why Buddha gave that vow, or what's the essence of that vow, why do they actually make that vow. It's so that they cut the root of suffering. They cut the root of harm. Cut the root of harm to oneself as well as to others. So that's the essence of the first vow. Here, when we say that, that is again, that vow, you know, from one, that one precept to the most elaborated precept, like the nuns, monks and the nuns, fully ordained monks and nuns vow, that is called as the individual liberation, pratimoksha vow, the individual liberation, where when we engage ourselves, we come to, you know, we engage ourselves in that that kind of training or that moral discipline, that eventually we can free ourselves from cyclic existence. So that's the individual liberation vow. But the essence of that one is to cut the root of harm. Cut the root of harm. So this is, and then comes Bodhisattva's vow, you know, which is again above that one. Bodhisattva's vow, again, the essence is, on top of cutting the root of harm toward oneself or others, the essence is to accomplish the source of benefit for others. So that's the vow of the Bodhisattva. Then comes tantric vows. You know, tantric vows is again above that one. At all times having pure vision, to cultivate pure vision, cultivating purity. So that those three essences we have to understand. So whichever vow we have taken, that's very important, you know, we need to now understand that this path is, you know, they work in such a way that this, the moral discipline or the training of the discipline is very important. So, you know, and actually, you know, we should not, we have to be serious about why we actually have to take, or we need to understand why we have to take the vow first. And once we have understood that, and we have to be serious about that vow. So then that context of confession comes there. So if we have vowed, then, you know, if we broke our vow, or if we break our vow, then we have to confess. We cannot just keep that way. That's why we're saying this is the training of the mind. And once we start to, what's that word, you know, just take for granted, then our mind becomes stubborn and stubborn. Your mind becomes more stubborn. Then we think, oh, this is okay. That discipline is not really important. You know, we keep on praying. We still, you know, recite our refuge prayers, but we don't actually follow our precepts. We, in fact, you know, take for granted of our precepts. And that, you know, thereby our foundation is not there. See how divergent a practitioner can be. So therefore it's very, very important to understand what precept, what kind of vow have we made. Once we have made that vow, if we are reflecting on our actions, our speech, our mind, that if we have made any kind, if we have, you know, broken any vow or any kind of, any of our precept, then it's very important that we need to confess and repair that. And that is only, if you don't do that, that will never prosper our practice, that will never develop or advance our practice. Because this is how the Buddha gave the teachings, and this is how the Buddha, you know, frames this training for us to enhance or to advance on the Buddha path, on the path to Nirvana or the path to Buddhahood. So it's very, very important to see.